on, and surprise, surprise, it's 41 in 30 because we officially this week, as we are in opening week, we are scant double-digit hours away from opening day. We've got players that have made the roster that aren't on the 40-man yet, but will be on the 40-man because they're going to be there opening day. Two of them, to be specific. One of them is Daniel Vogelbach. One of them is Brian Servin. We'll see about a Brian Servin deep dive. Maybe we'll drop that afterwards. Maybe it won't be in 30. But I thought, let's drop one more. I'm addicted to this stuff. I love talking to people about baseball. I love diving into these players. It's become habit. I've done it every night for about a month. So now when I don't do it, I feel like I am wasting my evenings. And luckily enough, I know a great person to talk baseball with. I have a great subject today as well. So we're talking Danny Burgers. We're talking Dan Vogelbach today. And I am joined by, I'm going to throw the word notorious in front of your introduction here. You know him, you love him from the dark depths of Blue Jays Twitter. One of the best to ever tweet it. I'm gonna leave it at just Spencer. Yes, Spencer.
Yeah, that's perfect.
It's perfect for you. It's perfect for me. Owner of so many of the best tweets of the last little bit. Spence, thank you so much for making the time today, man.
Thanks for having me on. It's been a fun series to follow. This is kind of like the last stretch of your marathon podcasting. One of the best marathon podcasting performances we've ever seen.
Oh, that's so kind of you. I've left myself Laddie and Bo, and I'm gonna have to do them in one day. But so it goes. How hard can it be to figure out what's wrong with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? I mean, really.
Yeah.
We dive into Danny Vogelbach. Before we get into the nitty-gritty and the numbers and the details, your overall thoughts on Dan Vogelbach as a Blue Jays addition and as a guy in general?
Yeah, I think that's you know, when we signed him, I guess just before, or was it just before spring training started?
February 18th, yeah.
Yeah, so it just seemed like one of these nothing things that, you know, we're just trying to invite some veteran presence to the locker room. But the more and more I thought about it and kind of how spring training has gone, he's sneakily become a pretty important piece to kind of begin the season. And what his role looks like to begin the season, I think, is very well defined. But what it looks like in May, what it looks like in June, what it looks like in July, is still kind of up in the air. So I think he's a little bit more than just a veteran depth piece pre-spring training signing. So,
yeah. So moving pieces to this, we'll obviously talk about it. The addition of Votto on a similar deal with similar money also sort of had people scratching their chins and wondering what that means for one or the other. Votto has tripped after immediately hitting a home run and now ceases to exist, apparently. The one rolled ankle, and that is he's going away for a little bit to Buffalo. Yeah, I do think it's interesting. I think Vogelbach, I agree with you. The first blush was like, oh, a non-roster invitee. This is basically nothing. He probably won't. It's like, oh, it's like Greg Bird. He's not really even going to make the roster. Well, let's not burn too much time with it. But he comes in. He takes Garrett Cole deep. He gets Garrett Cole all mad in spring training. He's here to hit home runs, and he hit home runs in spring. So here we are now on the eve, essentially, of opening day, and Dan Vogelbach is a major league player on the major league roster with the Blue Jays. I think it's a good little spring success story, I think. So, Dan Vogelbach, very simply, bats left, throws right, 6 feet tall, 270 pounds listed. I'm not one to tell anyone that they are or aren't what they are listed as. I'm just letting you know he is listed at 270. DH, he's a first baseman in the way that everyone has to be listed somewhere, and he is listed as a first baseman. I don't expect him to play there even once. No other team has done that in the last little bit, so... So it goes. 31 years old. He'll make $2 million guaranteed for making it after being a non-roster invitee. 6 years of service time. And as you mentioned, signed on a minor league deal February 18th. A quick look at the path. He was a second-round pick of the Cubs in 2011, traded to Seattle in 2016, purchased by the Jays August 2020. You may have blinked and missed it. It was, geez.
Four ABs or something.
Four, yeah, that's right. Five plate appearances, four at bats, a walk. And that was it. Waived on September 2020, signed by the Pirates in 2022, traded to the Mets last year, and finds himself on the Blue Jays. Before he was a Blue Jay, did you have any thoughts or feelings about our good friend Dan Vogelbach?
Not a whole ton. He's kind of like a little bit been boxed into, he's a very specific player on a team. Like he'll never see a left-handed pitcher. He'll never wear a glove, and he'll never be in any sort of running situation past the seventh inning. And it's a very specific skill set. And that's all he's kind of been known for. He was an all-star once, which is incredible. But he's had like kind of a wild career as like this guy who's good at hitting bombs and looking at pitches.
Yeah, that is the, not to spoil the rest of the episode, but that is basically it. The dude hits home runs and doesn't swing at anything else that he can't do damage on. You're absolutely right in terms of the specialized skill set. I think specialist is a good, political way to say sort of what Dan Vogelbach brings as a player. You're absolutely right about never facing lefties, about never going to be a guy who pinch runs. In fact, if he gets on base after the seventh inning, you can guarantee he will be replaced. Let's look at last year, because he sort of had, I don't want to call it a bounce back, but he did have a good year last year in terms of I'll say consistency, but he was above average hitter and was above average hitter the year before that as well in his split with the Mets and Pirates. 104 games last year, only 319 plate appearances. The kind of guy that pinch hits quite a bit. The slash line, 233, 339, 404, 13 home runs, a 13.2 walk rate, a 25.4 K rate. That's good for a 104 OPS plus or a 109 WRC plus, any way you slice it. I remember Mets fans being pretty happy with Dan Vogelbach. Your thoughts, again, we're talking about National League, so it's sort of not real, but your thoughts, taking a look overview of Dan Vogelbach's 2023.
Yeah, like I think that it was kind of a bounce back year after kind of bouncing to Milwaukee and Pittsburgh and not really doing anything. Yeah. And then in the Mets, like if you look at that Mets team, like they underperformed like crazy, but you look at where he ranked on the team, like he was in the tops of a lot of stat categories, like maybe a top 7-8 player in WRC plus. He played a lot more games than they expected. And that's including guys that like, they have some really big names on their team. So it's actually pretty impressive that he played that much time. But it was really a bounce back year. And I think that it presented a good opportunity for him this spring. Because a lot of these guys just like weren't getting deals, like these specialized players. You know, you think of guys, especially his, like maybe even a little older than him, like Tommy Pham. He went 4-for-4 in a World Series. He's still unemployed. And so Danny kind of ran with it. And use the bounce back season to kind of lean into this year. So it's kind of cool. I think it's been a bounce back year. It was cool.
Yeah.
And Mets fans seem to like him from everything I read.
He's in commercials last year. He was in commercials for like what the new league will be like, because he's a guy who never ever steals a base.
Oh,
they used him as
right.
like, oh, even Buck Showalter doing the like mental math. Yeah. An easy guy to root for in that way as well. And you're right about the weird market this year is like a guy like this has to take a minor league deal. And a guy like Tommy Pham is sort of has to navigate that. Am I taking more money and less at bats, or am I taking less money and more at bats? That weird little dance that these guys are being forced to do this year. Vogelbach's an example of that. It's like a guy that's going to have to fight for a minor league job, even though he's literally always been an above average or average hitter. We'll get into what it means to be an average hitter when you have the rest of the skill set here. But no, I think perfectly pointed out, a very good indication of how strange the market was for this type of player this year. Let's talk circles. The red circles, average exit below, hard hit rate, chase rate, walk rate, and whiff rate, which is to say hit the ball hard and didn't swing at pitches he couldn't hit hard. The blue sweet spot K percentage, expected batting average, base running value, and right in the middle there is barrel rate. That lines up with the profile. I mean, like, this is one of those things where sometimes the Statcast will throw you these curveballs or things off. No, all of this stuff tells you exactly that Dan Vogelbach is the guy that you think he is. I think it's sort of the big takeaway from a lot of this.
You almost don't need the stats to dive in on him. Like, it is exactly what you see. And that's fine. That's fine.
He's prototypical is another way to put it. You mentioned never faces lefties. They didn't even try it last year. He was 0-for-15 in 16 plate appearances against lefties. He really came on in the second half. We talked about Mets fans being a fan of his. 96 WRC plus in the first half, 129 in the second half. In a guy sort of a little bit Alejandro Kirk-ish, where like he has to hit line drives, never going to get on base with ground balls. Fly balls, just sort of because of his swing profile, end up being lazy outs, but hit 714 on line drives last year, a 347 WRC plus. So when he hits it well, it's usually good news for him.
Yeah, and the Mets, surprisingly, like against righties, started him a ton of games and batted him a lot at the fifth position and just rode him at DH. And he's not just like an afterthought in lineups too. Like, he's a pretty important piece. He can be a pretty important piece against the righty pitcher. So I think that's going to be Schneider's MO, like kind of in the beginning of the season, is we're going to see a lot of him maybe in those DH positions when Vladdy's on the field, Springer's feeling healthy, and Kirk is catching with Danny down. So we could see some fifth, sixth spot Vogelbach in the beginning of the year.
Very prototype of a five hitter, like very much five hitter, absolute prototype. Mm-hmm. And some other prototype stuff in here as a lefty, smashed sinker last year was the pitch he was best against. That's a pretty common we've seen throughout the research here. Lefties like to hit sinker quite a bit. It's a pretty common cookie pitch for lefties. 791 slugging against sinker and was good against spin this year. This was a big takeaway for me looking at his profile and what sort of changed for him, because he was a 98, 99 OPS plus guy in 2020 and 2021, which is like average when you don't have the other stuff and you're not hitting for extreme power. It doesn't carry as well. He did a really good job of not swinging at spin, not so much that he was hitting spin well. He just wasn't chasing, and the swing take value is a big part of his batting profile right now, laying off sliders especially and not getting chewed up by those down and in. A big part of that. And speaking of sort of not swinging, it's crazy how little he swings, actually. I couldn't believe it. 7% below league average in chase rate, 15% below in first pitch swinging, 11% below in swing percentage, 16% below league average in zone swing. In pitches in the zone, he swings 16% below league average. That's crazy. That's crazy.
He loves one pitch. It is crazy selective. I think it's almost... like, I think some Mets fans feel it's a detriment at times of how patient he is. But, I mean, it's like the David Schneider thing. Like, he just attacks pitches in the zone and just waits for his stuff. Like, he hates a lot of pitches. And I don't mind that. I don't mind that. That's kind of what you want from a DH, too, is just to kind of make good at-bats. And especially guys who are going to come in late in games and face a righty reliever like him, like he's going to be used a lot in those situations too.
It's funny to contrast this with, I think, some of the not shortcomings, but like talking about Alejandro Kirk a little bit earlier this month, and some of the narrative around Vladdy and even Bo, and a little bit George Springer too. It's like sometimes those guys' contact rates work against them. Vlad's a great example of this. It's like pitchers are working him away consistently because he swings at it and he's such a good hitter. He hits it and it's like you'd rather have him hit down and away into the ground than up and in and turn on it. And Kirk fell into that a lot last year. Bo famously hits everything to every field. Vogelbach's a nice counter to that of like you can also approach it this way of I know that I smash heat in the middle. Anything that isn't that, it's going to have to be two strikes or you're going to walk me. I think that's an interesting, difference to see in approach after, I mean, the results last year spoke for themselves and in the problems they had with that approach for a lot of those main top of the order guys. In some weird company with his contact rates and his swing rates as well. The zone contact is 62nd. We mentioned he swings 16% below the average. The contact rate, though, is 62nd among those with at least 300 plate appearances, right near Yordan Alvarez. If he barreled the ball twice as much, he made roughly the same amount of contact on zone swings as Yordan. The 36% swing rate, it's third lowest in MLB. Lars Nootbaar and Juan Soto are the only two who swing less often than him. He's in company with Schwarber, Betts, and Tellez as well. So a very neat mix of Schwarber and Tellez are sort of like really close to who he is. And then it's like, and also two of the best hitters on the fucking planet are this way. Oh my goodness. And had top 1% walk rate in the league in 2022. A guy that, you know, when I look at the profile, I sort of say, like, why wouldn't you walk Dan Vogelbach personally? Unless the guy behind him hits a home run, I'm usually pretty fine with him being there. We talk about that selectiveness. He likes it belt high, belt high middle, belt high away, up and away. The only real hole on the charts for things that he is going to swing at down and in is a little bit. He pops it up a little bit, but the offset of that is it's surrounded by danger, you know, middle in, middle, middle low, he crushes. So down and in is a bit of a, was a bit of a, bit of a lazy fly ball spot for him last year. But in general, that area is such dangerous for him that I'm okay with him taking those swings. What do you make of the swing rate? We talked a little bit about it there, but the swing rates, the contact rates, and the walk rates as part of his package.
I mean, the walks are what's like, that really pops out to me. I mean, I think that when you're limited in you know, your speed and what you're actually going to hit for average, I mean, the guy's really patient. And I mean, lots of red circles in that area. Like, you know, even going back to 2022 when he has all these numbers qualified, like 94 percentile in chase percentage, like that's the kind of stuff that you just love to see out of veteran guys who kind of serve in this role. And I feel like the Blue Jays have a nice mixture of guys, like you said, like Bo and Vlad, who are almost the exact opposite, like to Vogelbach in a sense. So it's nice to kind of have that balance in there. I mean, I'm not a super big stats guy, but you get what you see. Like, I like it. I like it. So it's nice to have on the team. Like it really is. It is. I feel like it's kind of beltish, right? And that's kind of the slight, I guess he's kind of supposed to be that replacement. It will be very difficult to fill those shoes, but it's beltish. And just that patient left-handed hitter who hits nukes.
Yeah. In absolutely no rush. I also, a little beltish in that, like, he seems to be, and this is again to bring it back to the stars, like it seems like he's in control of the at bat the whole time. Belt was great for that last year, where it was like complete disinterest in anything that wasn't what he wanted the at bat to be. And I think sometimes the top level guys in this team get a little pressy and they get a little antsy, they get a little wanting to break out. Yeah. And this is a guy that sits back and lets it come to him. And looks for things that he can pull or hit up the middle, because he is a 188 WRC plus pull side, 160 WRC plus middle, and a 41 WRC plus oppo. This is exactly what I want this profile to be. I want a dude that sits on his shit and rips it to the pull side. There is no need to try to be everything to all people. I would imagine all that oppo stuff is jam shots and weak contact. But yeah, not surprising. A big pull side profile. And again, we speak about things that they didn't have last year that they're looking for this year. A dude who sits back and rips it pull side is pretty welcome in the middle of the order.
Hopefully our offensive coordinator, Don Mattingly, is all for it. But, you know, I actually think it's still interesting that, like, you look at the home run spray chart, it's not like he's just pulling stuff. Like, he does do some damage left center field as well. I don't remember where the Cole home run ended up. Was that a pull? I feel like
the Cole one was a pure pull.
I feel like he did hit one sort of left center field in spring training. I might be completely forgetting, but Yeah, like it's he does have that ability to kind of take it deep the other way as well. He has shown that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there is you're absolutely right. There's a handful of left center field home runs going back the other way, which is sort of a nice, like, if he can hit it back up the middle, it's also a place that he has succeeded and hit with great power. So it's just a matter of, as we said, you know, at the risk of repeating ourselves, he is finding his shit and jumping on it, and everything else,
yeah,
borderline boring to him. So I feel it. Finally, and we talk again, this is the more you dive into it, you know, like, you can sort of see why he is the guy they pick. We talked about the different approach, we talked about the different fields, yeah, that he hits to. The last one, he was excellent with runners in scoring position and in high leverage last year. 158 WRC plus with runners in scoring position, a 275 412 522 slash, and 142 WRC plus in high leverage. That includes like being a very functional pinch hitter, a guy off the bench, which is I've been asking for this team to have. Give me, yeah, matchups on both sides with David Schneider. They're going to have, right? They're going to have lefty and righty sort of balanced bench options. This is what he's here to do. He's here to be up in a bad spot and be an imposing guy that forces you to come into the zone with runners in scoring position. We talked about the patience, the willingness to take a walk. What I see very clearly is a guy that, you know, when you are in runners in scoring position situation and you can't walk him, is very good at waiting for you to come to him. So I think they've stumbled into this pretty nicely here.
Yeah, I like it. Like, you know, I think going into the offseason, getting that left-handed bat was a priority. And one of them cost $700 million. Another one was Cody Bellinger. So then the market after that was like pretty bleak. Like, we were getting off-brand cereal at that point. But off-brand cereal is not always bad. Like, we got Kiermaier out of it, and no one saw him coming back. And then we got the exact opposite kind of left-handed hitter in Daniel Vogelback. And, you know, what kind of going back to what I said in the beginning, like, what we thought was maybe a nothing signing. Then he balls out in spring, and Horowitz doesn't ball out in spring. And you know, maybe a month of the season that very quickly changes. But, I mean, for opening day at least, that's our lefty bomb off the bench. And maybe he rolls with the opportunity. I think that'd be kind of cool. I know that people really want Votto. I think there's the older generation, especially, really wants Votto. But, you know, you roll your ankle at 40, and that's like a 2-month thing. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I get it. As somebody born in the 1900s, I get it. The appeal to Votto. Mm-hmm. I am of the opinion now that, like, there were people that were sort of saying, like, why, you know, you're taking Vogelback just to wait for Votto to come. I feel like you are making a lot of assumptions to not, yeah, take Votto, to not take Vogelback for that reason, right? Like, you're, yeah, assuming Vogelback won't be good. You're assuming Votto will be good. You're assuming he'll be ready in 2 days. As you said, it could take a month to heal a 40-year-old's rolled ankle. Will Votto take to riding the bus and being in Buffalo? He said all the right things, but that and going there and doing it are two different things. And as you said, like, no complaints with the results, man. He had a really nice spring. He had 3 home runs. He was, everything else is exactly who he's always been. 340 OBP, 540 slugging. This is who he is, and always has been. So speaking of who he is, let's look at the projections. The ones on Fangraphs didn't give me a lot of at bats, but they're pretty simple to work with. Steamer has him the highest. Steamer and Zips both sort of 233, 334, 416, 113 WRC pluses. Zips has him with the most at-bats and getting 14 home runs. ATC a little bit lower, 230, 340, 378, which is all to say, these all seem to think he's about the same guy, a 230 hitter with about a 340 OBP. ATC isn't buying the power as much. And I don't know the system on Marcel, I think it is, on Baseball Reference, but they have him for a bunch of at-bats and hitting 236, 343, 415, which is to say everyone thinks about the same, about a 750-something OPS. That seems about right. I mean, geez, we're talking about a guy that every possible projection gives you the exact same numbers, and they're all the exact same thing he's done every year of his career. It's hard to argue too much with these.
Yeah, it's 230, 340 is like the very typical Daniel Vogelbach slash line. Like, would it could be great if he bumped his batting average up 20 points this year and hit somewhere between 15 and 19 home runs. I think that would be like best case scenario. But, you know, again, going back to what we said, like, what does it look like in June? Is he on the bench in June? That's the thing with it being a DH too. Like, if you have 30 at bats where you struggle, you can't be like, oh, well, at least I'm showing up with my glove every day. It's like, this is what you do. You get paid to do one thing. And if you're not doing it and Spencer Horowitz is hot, it's going to be a very easy call for the Blue Jays.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, famously they have Springer and Vladdy who have to come through, and Justin Turner, who is also going to be taking more than a handful of DH at bat. So it's going to be pressure on to perform. That is for sure. Yeah. He's going to have to earn the at bats, but I continue to like him as an arrow in the quiver there. Nice piece to take on any reliever, who right-handed reliever coming out of the bullpen, going anywhere. But yeah, there is that. The projections are never going to have him for high war because he doesn't have any glove value and the base running value, which is sort of, it's a negative, right? He's a big, slow dinger smasher, second percentile sprint speed. Last year, he lost some base running value being thrown out stretching doubles, and the rest is like bold decisions. Yeah. He's not going to run. And this is sort of that thing of like, you know, Dan Vogelbach's 113 WRC plus and a average runner's 113 WRC plus are not the same thing. It's just sort of
very different. He's
unable to provide extra value. And that's the way that it goes. Discourse around Dan Vogelbach, I think people generally like him and are happy about him. There is that thing you mentioned. There is some Votto wanting going on here, though.
Yeah, there's going to be some people who want him to fail, sure. There's people have wanted Joey Votto on the Blue Jays for as long as Joey Votto's been alive. So those days are kind of dwindling in its chance. Yeah, I think people are going to want to rush Votto into that slot. But, I mean, I'm kind of all for Danny Burgers. Like, Votto has played very minimal games over the past couple of years. He's very injury-prone, as we've seen. Just walking through the dugout, you know, that's a month-long thing. Danny he showed up for the Mets last year. He was not supposed to be as big of a piece for them as he was, and he kind of was that guy on a very bad team. So hopefully he's a good player on a good team this year in a minimal role. That's what we're hoping for.
Yeah. And a fun guy to cheer for, and by all accounts, a good teammate, a good dude to have around. And who doesn't love a big fucking slugger? Like, give your head a shake if you don't. Wrap my favorite part of the process, asking you to force a comp. Who does Daniel Vogelbach remind you of in any way you can picture?
So I thought hard about this because I've listened to a few episodes. So I was on the way home thinking about who the comp was. I came up with two, and you mentioned both of their names in this podcast already. Rowdy Tellez, who I think Danny Vogelbach is better than Rowdy Tellez, but very similar player profile. And Kyle Schwarber's kind of like him as well, even though the Phillies are like determined to sometimes play him in left field. But a little similar as well. And I do like some Kyle Schwarber-based running clips. They're fun. They're fun to watch. I like when people put the SpongeBob noises over top of him running. That's always good for me.
Schwarber is like the spiritual, everything about it is the exact same. He's like, Schwarber is Vogelbach turned up to 1,000, right? It's like the batting average is even lower. The home runs are even higher. Everything else is gone. I think that's a great comp. Schwarber, one of my absolute favorites in the whole league. I went with, you may not know who this is, Alejandro Butch Hedo, who is.
Oh.
You know who that is?
No.
Which I do not. Is the villain in the movie Rookie of the Year.
Wait, which one's that one? Is that the monkey one?
No, that's the one where the kid breaks his arm.
Okay, sorry. That's the one with, okay.
The one where the kid breaks his arm and can suddenly throw 100 and pitches for the Cubs. There was a main villain who played for the Mets, and it was just a huge guy. The only guy in the league that had the Rookie of the Year figured out, because he would just sit fastball and absolutely smash it. He comes up in the biggest spot and ends up striking out. But he takes that kid, Thomas Ian Nicholas, Henry Rowan Gartner, deep a bunch of times in the movie. Just a big snarling slugger who stands in there and crushes fastball. He's like a movie version of who you would cast to play a slugger. So yeah, I'm going with Alejandro Butch Hitto.
I have not seen that movie in a very long time.
You haven't seen Rookie of the Year? Oh my goodness.
In a very long time. It's been a few years. I know, not on the baseball rotation.
It should be.
Not as much. It should be. And that one with the monkey and Joey from Friends. I think
most valuable primate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we should probably watch that more often.
We'll throw it on. We'll do a review of that on the feed, I think, for people. We've reached the 2024 outlook. We've danced. We talked about it quite a bit, though. He's gonna have to fight for the meal. He's gonna be a bench option. He's gonna be a DH. He's not gonna run. He's not gonna field. If I think he is a guy that you're able to even more granularly be like, oh, we got a sinker baller on the hill tonight. We got a guy who goes to two seam a lot tonight. We got a guy who the velocity and the pitch types match up with Danny's strengths. He is a guy that allows them to be a little more agile with their matchups, I think. And that is probably how he's best deployed in 2024.
Yeah, absolutely.
In bigger picture, I mean, it's tough. This is probably a good time, not a long time, I assume, with Dan Vogel back. If he could be a cult hero. We could be sitting here in months from now and be like, I can't believe Dan Vogel back hit 30 jacks this year and was like the savior and had that wild card home run. But I don't think that we're, locking down Dan Vogelback for a long-term contract.
I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, you never know. Like, maybe someone gets injured early on and he does stick around for longer and the playing time he gets kind of helps him out. Like, you're not sure. It's really difficult to pinpoint. But yeah, it's probably going to be a one-season thing. For sure.
It could be half a season. It could be. I mean, that's been, he's played for a lot of teams for a guy that hasn't played for that many years, but every team could use a Dan Vogelback for a little bit. Boy, that's it. Isn't that exciting? How do you feel?
Ran through it.
We ran through it.
I'm excited for Thursday. It clicked this past weekend that I get to watch baseball all weekend. I'm very excited.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, not knowing what's going to happen. And I hope people listening to this are optimistic. There's no reason to be this mad this early. Things are going to – you get Dan Vogel back to watch. Thank you so much for the time, Spencer. I know we picked a guy that we could have probably done this in two sentences, but we took the time to find every angle as best we possibly could. You can find Spencer on Twitter – or X, if you're nasty, at Spen. And then I want to say that's 6 underscores.
I think so, yeah.
Are you adding them every so often?
No, I just changed it once, and I honestly really regret it. and since some bot took my old one, so I regret it even more.
Tough scene. You should follow me. Don't miss out. I mean, more people follow you than follow me, so you should be telling them to follow me. Forget
Zeus.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time, Spencer. I will see you online. And speaking of home runs, we are about to close this podcast out and go do a baseball fantasy draft. I love this.
Yes.
The only stat in the league is home runs.
I love it.
I haven't been in a fucking fantasy league in, I would say, at least 12 years. And this is what brings me back. Just home runs? That's a fucking league. Now we're cooking.
This is way more fun. I feel like baseball fantasy, it's very long, it's very engaging. That's why I like fantasy football. I just have to set it on Monday and I don't have to think about it. But just home runs, this is fun. This is fun to get behind. I think the later rounds are going to be there's going to be some weird players selected, and I'm looking forward to it.
Extremely easy to follow. So I will let you go so we can do that. Spencer, thank you again for the time, and thank you everybody for being a part of Less Than Jays.
Thanks, Zeus.